Okay, so I'll start off if that's okay.
Well, okay, okay, you do that. Do you want to make an opening statement or?
Oh yeah, sure. Do you want to?
Okay, I'll do that. I just wanted to say that I'm really, really grateful that I've got the chance for Reuben and I to have a conversation, because I think it's just so important that the older generation listen to the kids today. We've got leaders who say kids should just be at school, be quiet, don't do anything. Trump, for example, our own Prime Minister. And we've got some fantastic examples of kids with huge amount of wisdom telling us what to do. Greta Thunberg,
yeah.
The Climate for Strike people that we see here in Perth. And I've been so moved by them. So I just wanted to make that opening. And Reuben, thank you. Thank you for asking me to come along.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. And also vice versa. I think it's really important to get kind of a perspective from both sides of the generation. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good on you. Okay.
Anyway, okay. So here's my first question. Have you always been interested in climate activism?
Well, there's a short and a long answer to this one. So the short one is no.
Oh, yeah.
It was only a short while ago. But let me start with the long one, if you can bear with it. You'll find that grandparents always want to talk about how it used to be in the old days. So that's what it is. But I can remember when I was just about 2 years older than you, I was sitting in my social... This was in primary school too.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in my social studies class when the teacher said this, and I remember it very clearly because I was very impressed by it. He said, you know, the world is so large that when we put pollutants into it, it just handles it and gets rid of it. That's what was the belief, that we didn't need to worry about it. And I thought, isn't that fantastic? The world is large. And I started out my young life thinking that that was okay, and I think many, many people did that. And I was aware of climate change for quite a long time. When I first went to university, I can remember that the issue about a hole in the ozone layer was happening. This is about 1967, maybe, and that used to be, you know, these sort of pressure packs that we kill flies with and everything. Everybody was worried about the gases in that causing the ozone layer. So there was a change made, you know. So the governments took action on that. And so I suppose I started out thinking then that, well, people take notice of what scientists say and they do things. And how wrong can you be?
Yeah,
how wrong can you be? But you get into this sort of, it's okay, it'll happen eventually, and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's it. What about you? When did you start getting interested?
To be honest, I didn't really have a straight answer. I can't really remember when I first learned about climate change. But I do think for maybe the younger generations, climate change has kind of, we've always known about it, because maybe the older generations, climate change was something you first heard about on the news maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But for younger kids, I think we've always known about it, and in some ways it almost becomes a normality. Mm-hmm. And I think it will kind of continue to hang over us for the rest of our lives. That is, unless we do something about it and kind of turn the situation around, because right now that is what it will take.
Mm, that's right, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right. You had another question for me?
So you said you recently became quite interested in it. So what really sparked your involvement?
Okay, I can tell you almost to the minute when it happened. It was on the 16th of August this year at about 2 a.m. in the morning. And I have this habit of going to bed with radio on because it helps me go to sleep, and I listen to the BBC. And that's great, but the downside of that is that you can wake up in the middle of the night and something on the radio just hits you and then you're awake. And that happened on that night. I woke up about 2 a.m. in the morning. There's this report coming through from the BBC about how Scott Morrison's reaction to the Pacific Nations. And he went to a forum of all the Pacific Island ministers, prime ministers, and they were trying to get Australia to make a commitment to reduce their coal mining. and to set limits on carbon emissions. And Scott Morrison said, well, my responsibility is for the Australian people. And basically what he was saying was that we're going to look after our economy, and that's what we're going to look after. And there was a Prime Minister of Tuvalu who said that look, you're just worried about your economy. We're worried about our people.
Yeah.
And really what Scott Morrison was saying was that, well, that's your problem. It's not ours. And we'll keep on doing what we're doing. And do you know, at that same meeting, the minister, the Prime Minister of Tonga actually shed tears during the climate thing. Now, if something like that can't move our Prime Minister to say and commit to doing something, then what on earth will? And that just made me so angry.
Yeah.
I got so angry, and I just couldn't go to sleep, and I was awake till the morning trying to work out what I was going to do about it. And I knew by then that you'd probably ask me what it was a bit later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I find it horrible that people just choose to look the other way.
Yes.
And do the easy and that, take
that's
the easy
right.
way out.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, I might as well tell you what I did then, okay?
Yeah.
And you give me another question. I don't want to do all the talking, right? But by the time I'd woken up, I was thinking about my grandkids, you know, and what it was going to be like for them. And so I thought, well, I'm going to do something about grandkids. And I thought, well, there must be lots of other grandparents like me who are worried about their grandkids out there. So I want to mobilise them and get them to work as a group with me to do something about it.
Yeah.
So at that point, I started looking around for where I could start that.
Yeah.
And then it so happened that a few days before that I'd heard once again on the BBC about Extinction Rebellion in the UK.
Yeah.
I didn't even realise that they were doing something here. And when I started looking around, I discovered that they did. So that was my platform. So I went along to their meeting. Yeah.
Oh,
and I found out they have these, what they call affinity groups.
Yeah.
And so that's what I decided to start up, a grandparents affinity group.
Yeah.
And it's gone very well so far, I might say.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. It's really refreshing to see ideas like this.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think it's very refreshing to see somebody like you doing something. So I want to hear about what you were doing and what got you started. And
Well, really, I personally am a big fan of Greta Thunberg. So, so naturally, when she posed the school strike, Fridays for Future idea, I wanted to strike as well.
Mm.
But understandably, when I asked my parents, they said no. And I think that would be the case with a lot of kids at my school, seeing as it's a primary school and a lot of the kids are quite young. So I thought, as kind of a way of showing our support and aid of what she is doing, every Friday we could get together as well and kind of discuss any of our thoughts or concerns on climate change and fill in any grey areas when in other parts of the world or even the country kids like us are striking and marching to, so that was kind of what it's about.
Okay.
But
and how do you hope that that's going to spread to other people and get your word out?
Oh yeah, well, I think like anything, it starts small then kind of grows bigger.
Yeah.
So I think on the first session we had about like 7 people come.
Yeah.
But then in the most recent one we had 19 people come.
Fantastic.
So I think like anything, the word kind of just gets around and it grows.
Yeah.
So
and
I hope that'll continue to do so in the future.
And I suppose they go and tell their parents.
Yeah.
And their parents tell their grandparents. Yeah, I hope so. Get them all involved. But and what you're doing now is fantastic, because right here you're spreading the word from what you're doing. We're going to be on a podcast, it'll go out to other people, which is fantastic. So you're so right. Even young people start out doing things and it can have a big impact, and we've just got to keep on doing that.
Definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so why do you think it's important for the older generations to get involved in climate activism?
Well, I think we have an absolutely huge moral obligation to do that. A couple of weeks ago, I was at an action where the school strike children went to march from Porras Place to the convention centre, where there was a science technology sort of things for mining companies was being held, and we wanted to get a message there. So we oldies were waited there while the kids came along, and there's a huge, you could hear them coming down the street, it was fantastic. And they, when they turned up there, I was able to get hold of the microphone, and I was able to say to them how sorry we grandparents are for not doing anything, the things we should have done decades ago.
Yeah.
And I curse myself now that I've never got involved earlier, you know. And I said we're sorry that we've left it for the younger generation to feel that they have to do it when it was really our responsibility to do it. And I remember our role model, I think, of Greta saying to the United Nations meeting recently, this is wrong, I shouldn't be here, I should be in school, I should be studying. This is all wrong, and it is, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's the answer, we've just got to do it. I made a commitment that we grandparents, and some of them are here, our ex-grandparents, I made a commitment on their behalf, or your behalf, that we will do everything we can to try and achieve climate justice for the younger generation. So we're really going to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what you're doing by at least in acknowledging these facts, that's more than most people are willing to do. So that's
good. Yes, well, it's our job to get people to do that, isn't it? Yeah. So once again, I think more than we, the older generation, it's the younger ones that have got the most pull. You know, that's what people are going... I think the school strike, the children movement, gets a lot more impact across to people than we older ones can do. But all we can do is really support them as best we can. Now, I think I had some questions with you, right? Let me dig some of them out. Where is it? When you get older, your memory goes and you've got to look things up, sorry. But I remember one of them. Yeah, some parents... here we are. Okay. Some parents want their children to be protected from worrying about climate change.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't want to talk about it with their children. And I was just wondering what you think about that.
Well, I think taking climate action often gets labelled with the word political. And I think it can be made political if you want it to. I personally support that because sometimes civil disobedience is the only thing that the people in power listen to.
Yeah.
But I don't think it necessarily has to be made political. I think taking climate action has lots of different meanings. And those range from, like, protesting and marching and striking of school to simply dropping in on a lunchtime club to talk about climate change.
Yes.
So,
And did you get anxious and worried about climate change?
Yeah, I do, because, to be honest, it's quite a big, overwhelming problem, and I think it's kind of normal to feel scared by it. It would be strange if I wasn't.
She wants everybody to be scared.
But I think it also makes me kind of feel pushed and pushed to kind of educate people about this and really pushed to do better for the next generations so they won't have to live in a world where the air's never too clean or the seas aren't polluted.
That's fantastic. And when you started doing this, how did you feel? Did it make you feel better or what? Because some of the older people and the activists that I met with, they say things like, how could I look my children in the eye and say I've done nothing, and they worry about it. But when they start doing something about it, they feel much better. They feel like inside they feel better. Yeah. Is it the same for you?
Yeah, I think knowing that I'm kind of contributing to, like, this big movement and I'm really kind of making a difference, yeah. that's kind of reassuring for me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it kind of helps me feel quite sure of myself when I'm in doubt or yes. something.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so... So tell us about collective action. Why is it important, and why did you start your Extinction Rebellion Affinity Group?
Okay, I'm going to go back to the old days again now. But when I was a student, first a student in 1969. I'd been a student a bit before that, and then I got caught up in the... I got conscripted, and I was in the army for a bit. I got out... went back to university. And at that time, there's a lot of collective activism because of the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And the numbers just grew and grew, and all the protests in the street happened. And also, at the same time, when there's apartheid in Africa, and then when the rugby teams came across, there was protests about that. And I was involved in some of those protests. Even to the point where there's a riot at the university. I'm not advocating riots, but there was one. it was a huge thing. But it was that collective activism that got us movement, yeah. I think, so that when the Labor government came into power and one of their platforms was that they would, when they got in, they would stop conscription and they'd pull out of the Vietnam War. And that was a collective action. And there's been lots of examples of that over the years, like the suffragettes, for example,
yeah.
and you know, the people protesting here for Aboriginal rights and recognition, and we can think of Gandhi in India, who with his non-violent activism was able to get independence for India. So there's lots of examples of that. If we look at what we can do as individuals, well, it's been decades where the scientists have been saying, look, we've got a major problem. They've been telling the politicians, there's people been writing letters and so on and so on, and it's got absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
And I think you're right when you said earlier, you think there needs to be some sort of action, collective action, and it's the numbers of people that really make the difference.
Yeah.
And then you asked, well, I think you asked, why did I think it was important to start the grandparents' climate action? And the aim of it, well, there's a broad aim. Of course, we want to get change. We want to get same things that Extinction Rebellion generally wants. They want to get action on climate change to get the emissions down to zero by 2025. They want the governments and politicians to tell the truth. And I'll talk about this other one a bit later. They're wanting something called citizens' assemblies.
Yeah.
But let's leave that aside for the moment. There's those broad aims. But in terms of the grandparents, I wanted to... My main aim, immediate aim, is to get the numbers up.
Yeah.
The mass action. And we need everybody to come along. And the bigger crowds we get, the more concerned the politicians become.
Yeah.
They do, and it works.
Yeah.
So we've just got to do it. So that's what I'm doing. I want to get the word out. And I thought grandparents can be successful in that because we can make that personal connection between what's happening and our own grandkids. And there's this real internal urge for us to look after our offspring and to protect them.
Yeah.
Something we haven't been doing, but we've got to do it now. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yep.
Have you faced any particular challenges in starting the group?
Oh, I think all the challenges were mainly within myself. You know, the doubts about, oh, will it work or not ever? You know, how am I going to do it? Will people listen to me? Whatever. But I have to say, it's been an easy route for me because Extinction Rebellion embraced the ideas and helped me set up the group. And there's been some wonderful grandparents come along who are very active, some of them here. I have to acknowledge them. They've been absolutely fantastic and energetic and doing things. And so that's working pretty well. I think you were going to ask me about going to getting arrested. I guess that was a bit of a challenge. because I'd never been arrested before. I've never been in trouble with the police before. And I'll tell you something before I get onto that. My own grandchild the other night, she heard I was going off to yet another one. And she said, "Papa, I don't want you to do that. Why do you do that? I don't like you doing that." And I tried to explain. And she wasn't really listening. She went off on her own upstairs. And I thought, well, she's just got to... I'm still going to do it. And then I went to a meeting and I opened up my book where I take my notes, and there she had scribbled on it, "Papa, what's the point of going to prison?" There's no point to it, is there? There's none. That was there written up in front of my eyes just before I started writing in the meeting. Well, let's answer that. But I think there is a point to it, in that it demonstrates to people that you're prepared to really go the distance, I think, and do something that to the point where the government might have to listen, you know, and we're not mucking around, we're doing this. It also ties up the police an awful lot, and they don't like that. I was in the cells for 10.5 hours while people were being processed, and that was an awful lot of time being taken up by the police, and we get criticised for that. But I have to say, in many ways, the police were helpful. But it's also a cost to the government. And they probably don't want their resources to be tied up like that. Yeah. They might even spur them to do something about the climate change, you know, and take some action there. So that's part of it. But in terms of my personal challenge was, well, I was certainly worried about that. What am I going to do? And we decided to take a nice little peaceful route on that. We grandparents thought we could just sit down on the middle of the road and have a picnic like grandparents do, and that's exactly what we did. And that turned out to be a good thing, and some of our picnickers are here today. And so when the policeman came, I just got up and walked away with him. And it turned out he had the same surname as me. He had Harrison across the top. When he took my name, I said, "Oh, I think we're related." And maybe he looked after me then, but we had to get into this paddy wagon.
Yeah.
And there's six of us in there. It's divided down one side, and then you go into the cells and you get searched to see if you've got anything on you. And then we're just in the cells for a while. I won't tell you all about it, but it was a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't so bad, really. I felt quite peaceful while it was all happening, yeah.
Well, that pretty much answers my next question about getting arrested.
Okay. Right. Well, have I answered that, do you think? Okay. All right. What else? Well, let me try and find a question for you. Here I am. Look, I'm more nervous than what you are. I can see that. What have I got here? Now this is one I like to know. Did you get angry when you thought about climate change?
I do get angry. And to be honest, I think that people of my age, we kind of have every right to be angry.
Yeah.
The past generations have kind of created this problem. Yeah. They just passed it on to us, the kids, to solve.
Yes.
But I think it's also really important to use that anger productively and kind of make the effort to just kind of be open to learning more about it and willing to. So, yeah.
You've just answered what I was going to say to you after you said that. But I was going to say, look, and Greta wants everybody to be angry too. He said, "I don't want your hope, I want you to be angry. I want you to be angry like me." And I do think anger is a very important part of the protest. It gets you going, it energises you. And you said it gets you, you've got to do something about it. And that's the important thing about anger. I'm talking as a psychologist now. It's very important not to just hold it inside.
Yeah.
And use it productively, just like you said.
Yeah.
And that energises you. And if you can do that, then you don't get depressed if you hold it in.
Yeah.
And angry, and you feel you can't do anything, you do get depressed.
Yeah.
I sort of protested yesterday. and they were taking photographs of the protesters. You know, they wanted to take their own, the school strike, the kids wanted their photos taken, and us grandparents who lined up behind them. And there's a lady there at the side came up to be helpful and took asked the school kids whether she'd like her to take the photos. And, being the activist I am, I said, oh, I bet that person's a grandparent. So I went over later and asked her if she was a grandparent, and she said, yes, I am. And I said, well, look, would you like to join us? And she said, no, I think it's too late. We can't do anything. And I know all about you because I've got a friend who's involved and that sort of thing. And I said, well, it's not too late. Even if something were too late for some things, we've got the ability to slow down the rate of change and to ameliorate. And with a bit of luck, you know, maybe in the future scientists might be able to do something to reverse it, but we can't depend on that hope.
Yeah.
And she was an example. I brought her up as somebody I think who has got depressed by the whole situation and really needs to get out there and do something.
Yeah. Well, on what you were saying earlier, I think anger can either be made into a negative thing or it can be used as a tool.
Yes.
And I think it's really important to use it as a tool and get the most out of it.
Yeah, good on you.
What is your hope for the future with the group and everything?
Okay. Hope is a dangerous word, and I'll tell you why. And Greta knew why. She said, I don't want your hope. People tell me we've got to give children hope for the future. And she said, I don't want your hope. I want you to do something. I want your action. And if we sit around hoping that things are going to get better, then it won't. But of course you do have some hope. And what I'd like to see is that we do get that action quickly, and we can achieve it, you know, and we can do something about it. But there's a broader issue too. I don't believe that climate activism on its own should just be focused at climate action. We got into this situation because we weren't vigilant about what was happening in the broader society. We're in this situation now because we let democracy start to fail. It's failing now because our politicians are not representing us for what we want or in our best interests. They are looking after their own interests and staying in power. And they are listening to the big corporations and the corporations who fund their campaigns and so on. And we let that go. The other areas too, we've let the press not be a free press anymore. It's a couple of great examples of good journalism at the moment. The Guardian, for example, is doing a really good job of trying to get a good message across, and they've made a commitment to get stuff out about climate change. The ABC is doing a good job. I can't think of many other outlets that have made that commitment, and somehow we've got to change that round, because a free press, a press that tells the truth and gets the truth out to people, is so important. So getting back to my hope, I hope that, and this comes into one of your other questions, I'm sure, that the younger generation will grow up being activists in a broad area to make sure that democracy works. Remember I said something about one of the Extinction Rebellion things about a citizens' assembly? That's only there because democracy is not working. It's because the politicians aren't listening to us and are arguing that there should be a representative group of people who let the politicians know what they want in this example about climate change, and they should act on it. I think we should look broader than that. There shouldn't be a need for that, and we've got to do something. So my hope is that the younger generation will do what we failed to do, and that you grow up, you yourself and your friends and whatever, grow up not letting the government get away with anything, not letting the press get away with anything, so that this sort of situation doesn't arise again.
Oh, quickly, on what you were saying about journalism, when I'm doing my research for each session and I'm searching up topics, like a good 70% of the stuff that I find, it's doesn't really tell you anything. No. But it's refreshing to see that not all sites are like that. So The Guardian and ABC News there. So it's kind of refreshing to see those ones.
Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah.
And the other thing we need to do, we need to educate people. I'm sure you're going to have the privilege of being well educated. I was lucky to have that. And we've got a role to make sure that we find ways of getting the messages across that are complicated messages to the people who perhaps haven't had the training that we've had to do it. So the scientists have had to, and they're just doing that now, find ways of explaining it and getting it across. And we've got a role to do that as well, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Have you exhausted your questions?
I've got one last one to
finish. Have you? Okay. Well, I'll check what I've got first. I think I've covered mine. So, with yours.
Okay. What is your message for other members of your generation and the climate deniers of your generation?
Oh, okay. This is the one I really wanted to answer. I'm going to address this not just to everyone here, but to anybody who's listening to this podcast. And I want to tell all those grandparents out there and other people of my generation that they have to get active. They shouldn't sit there thinking, oh, I don't have to get arrested, because they don't have to get arrested. They shouldn't be there thinking, I can't do anything, I'm just an individual. You can do something, and if we get in numbers, the numbers is the thing that we've got to get.
Yeah.
Just turn up at a rally if you don't do anything else. Think about your kids. What's going to happen to them? Do something about it. Don't abandon your kids. Come on, join us. Get involved. Please.
Okay. Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah, okay. Cool, thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you, folks. And I think there's question time, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Questions?
Yeah, sure.
Well, thank you. Quite an excellent example of the fact that no one is too young or too old to make a difference. We'll take some questions now. So, yes, excellent. Should we start out with
Scott? You said Scott Morrison. He said that he refused to let Australia help in the climate change. Are there any other like major countries that would do that, have done that as well?
Oh, yeah, the United States.
Recently Trump decided that the US wasn't going to participate in that agreed in the Paris Agreement. So, I think it's quite annoying to see world leaders just choosing to look the other way.
Do you feel like the government threatens the press not to say anything that happens on the inside, like about climate change?
I think the government has the power to kind of shut down these stories, and that frankly needs to be changed.
Yeah, and I think also the press have a big monopoly, have the power to get the politicians to do what they want, because the politicians want them to support in their campaigns and so on. And if they go against the policies of the newspapers, that's a problem. I remember John at the back there. John's my brother-in-law. Years and years ago, we were driving down to Mandurah, I think, in my MG, and we were talking about press, I think the lucky country and all that sort of stuff. And I remember you made the point to me that I'd never thought of before, that the public get manipulated by the press and so on. And that struck me, and it's been so true, and it's happened ever since. We get manipulated by people with power, with the press and what can be said. So we've got to fight that. That's one of the things we've got to fight.
So, Ruben, if I was 10, well, listening to you, can you explain to me how does a young person like yourself actually go up there in school and start this club? So what are the mechanics of it? So what did you do? How did you get people? What did you say? I'd love to hear
that. So first I went to kind of... there was a temporary headmistress because the that, because the main one was on leave, so I thought I'd kind of ask her. So I kind of had the idea, like I said, I thought it would be good to kind of get together. So I'd kind of had the idea for about a week or so. And then, yeah, sort of, I spent like about half an hour trying to convince her. I had to catch up on all the schoolwork.
You have to tell us what your argument was.
But then, yeah, and I think, so she said yes, which was a big, so I was really happy about that. So yeah, it took kind of a while. So I had asked in, I think, the first week of the summer term. So the first session actually got in the fifth week of the summer term. But yeah, it was really good to kind of see my ideas coming alive. And then, yeah. But yeah.
So after you spoke to the headmistress, what do you do then?
I kind of just told lots of my friends about it. And I tried to get some posters put up around the school, but I wasn't really allowed to. But yeah, I kind of persevered, and yeah, by week five, I'd kind of come up with sort of a plan about how everything would work. And yeah, it was relatively easier than I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to have to go through quite a lot through it, but yeah, I think it was, the idea was kind of welcomed quite warmly. So yeah,
Ruben, how long do you meet? What do you do at this meeting?
So we meet for 30 minutes every week, and in that time we kind of discuss some topics, so some important topics that are happening right now. So last week we talked about how Indigenous and Native communities throughout Australia and the world, they're experiencing the effects of climate change first and worst. And I showed them a little video about Aboriginal communities and how they're coping with climate change from the front line. So then I try and have like a serious topic, and then we kind of move on to something a little bit more fun. Over the last couple of weeks, I've introduced kind of an art project we've been doing. So I've asked people to kind of bring in their recycling, and our project for the summer holidays and next year is to try and make a sculpture out of all of those things. So I think that kind of helps to kind of keep them focused and concentrated, especially as the club is with Kids for Kids.
Did you have another question for
you? You talked about how do you take complex ideas and simplify them to get grandparents who otherwise may not have had a thought about it.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's one thing if you have the privilege of education and higher education to think through critical stuff. And there's a lot in the community who don't.
Yes.
But for whom some of these are going to impact the most.
Yes.
How do you get some of those people on site from, even in the city of Perth, from some of the suburbs where disadvantage prevails and people don't have the time? So what strategies do you have? Do you have any?
Okay, we're actually struggling with that particular problem. In some suburbs, it seems to work. The Extinction Rebellion has this concept of what they call town halls, so they have a speaker, or they, you know, try to get people to come in and listen. In other places, it doesn't happen. We, as grandparents, we tried a couple of things like that. We thought we'd go out to a suburb and have a picnic and put posters up and ask people to come. I think one person came to us late, so we've got to think of new ways of doing it. I'm now thinking that the idea of trying to get people to come to us is a bit flawed, and we need to go to them.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a couple of ideas that I wake up in the middle of the night with these ideas. In the morning, I wonder whether they're crazy or not. But what I'd like to do to get more grandparents involved is get up a nice presentation that we can do. Extinction Rebellion's got a fantastic one that's geared to populations in general, but I want to get it geared to the impact of climate change on children and your grandchildren and so on. And there's some fantastic visual stuff that you can show in that. Like there's one that I remember showing the way that the ice caps and the ice in the Arctic is melting, and NASA's done all these photographs and it's been put into a time-lapse thing, and you can just see it moving out, and then you can talk about how the ocean is becoming a heat sink, you know, the the ice used to reflect the heat. It's going into the water. The water is heating up and the ice is melting, and you get that sort of what they call the tipping points there, and there's some of those are very close. So things like that. The ABC did a fantastic thing that just a week ago where they a little graphic thing where you put in your date of birth.
Yes.
Did you do that? Anybody else do that?
No,
yeah. And that was fantastic, and I put mine in, and it showed what the summers were like.
When I was
your age, Truman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it showed it what it's like now, and then you could show it what it would be like if we don't do anything, and it was a bit scary. And so that's why we've got to work hard to change that. But those sort of things will get that message across. And you know, the people who put this XR show together are very clever at that. So if we can get that out, that comes to my other idea. I want to get a caravan, a small caravan, that I can make into a climate information centre and have stuff on the side and have videos available and go out to, say, let's say that down the lake at the bottom of Kings Park, there's lots of people go with their kids during the day and then invite people to come and have a look, or go to where there's a busy shopping centre and get people, go out and take it to the people. Then and then invite them and get that knowledge across if we can. The other way I thought of, and I don't know if this will work, is for us to have a big event that really gets the media attention, you know, like the big rally that happened in what they call the Spring Rebellion when I got arrested, you know, and then when the awareness of that sort of thing's heightened, then to invite people to come to a town hall meeting. But I'm not so sure that's going to work, but yeah, so yeah.
A question for Reuben and then one for Les. Reuben and all the other younger people in the room, climate change, if you go forward 20, 30, 40 years, is really scary. It's catastrophic. Mm. Would you rather be told about that and then told some of the things that can happen, or would you rather be comforted and protected from it? From the information?
Definitely told, because at the end of the day, it's not the old generation's world, it's our world, and we are the leaders of tomorrow. And in order to be the leaders of the future generations, we need to know what the problems are. So I don't see anything wrong with, like, kind of opening kids' eyes from a young age. So definitely, yeah. And I think, however scary the facts may be, that's what gets the messages across. So for adults who can't deal with that, I don't have anything to say.
Is there anybody else in this room that disagrees with you? No, I'm good. Les, I've got first of all, I understand that in federal parliament, about 7% of the members have got any kind of STEM qualification, maths, technology, etc.
Yeah.
I presume the rest of them are mainly lawyers or politicians, and they rely more on rhetoric and argument.
Yes.
And the rhetoric is more important than the outcome.
Yes.
Do you see it like that, and do you think that there's any way of being able to break through that? I'm an engineer, but I'm used to trying to do things, including about climate sustainability.
Yes.
But if I wasn't in that framework, the technical sort of practical framework, and I was in that other Canberra bubble, if you like.
Yes.
Can you see any wonderfully insightful way of breaking into that bubble?
I have to confess that I've almost given up thinking that's possible. You know, I find it so hard to understand why people accept science and the outcomes of science in so many parts of their life. It's all around us. And medically, we drive cars that are, you know, built on the basis of science. We go over bridges, that we trust science in so many ways. And why, when it comes to climate? But for God's sake, we even trust the science when we look up the forecast for the next few days. That's okay. But when it comes to what's going to happen a bit further out, oh, no. That's all nonsense and that sort of thing. So it is rhetoric. It's ideology. Unfortunately, it could be more than that too. Once again, going back to our hero, Greta, she said to the United Nations people, I hope you don't believe in climate change, because if you do, that is evil. And unfortunately, there are people who do that. There's companies who think their profits and shareholders are more important than the future of the children, and that's there. And I think that what Extinction Rebellion's doing is perhaps the only way we can break through that, to make them realise that they're going to lose their power if they don't do something. And that's why we've got to take non-violent direct action. We've got to do things that demonstrate our determination. And that's why I support Extinction Rebellion. I don't like doing it, but we have to do it.
I have a question for John.
Yeah. For me?
Yes.
Liz. You're as bad as I am with names. Thank God. I'm glad it happens to the younger generation as well.
As an activist group, you still want everybody in your group to be comfortable. So yeah. With some people who still want to express their ideas, but they don't want to go on, like, protests, like marching protests or rallies.
Yes.
Like, what do you do with them? Like, do you let them express their ideas at meetings, and then like they don't go on the protests?
Yeah.
Yes,
we would do that. Our reliance on numbers, as I was saying before, we'd certainly encourage them to do that. But to take a role in that where they feel comfortable. So there's, let's say we're on a protest. I'll tell you the sort of people we need. We need the people doing the marching. We have what's called police liaison people, so they go and talk to the police and let them know what we're doing and so on. We have people who have the role of de-escalating things. So if it looks like somebody's going to get a bit upset or maybe loud or even violent, they have the role of stopping that. But we also have people who hand out leaflets and so on. We have people who could be away from it a bit and just there when people are feeling a bit stressed out and they need to go somewhere, so they're there to, sort of comfort them and maybe give them, sit down, have a chat, do that sort of thing. So I think there are lots of roles that people who would be uncomfortable in the direct action stuff could help there to support it. And in meetings, if people came along, then I'll say don't come along, and we'll welcome their ideas and we might be able to use them as well. So that would be useful too. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Ruth, because you've lived in London and I was just wondering if you've noticed any similarities and differences between, like, groups in England and their climate action and groups here in Australia.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think there's been a big difference in especially the Extinction Rebellion. I think in London, the Extinction Rebellion, I personally found they were quite exclusive and maybe not as welcoming to people who weren't higher or upper middle class or people of colour. But I think here in Australia, they're much more inclusive and welcoming. And I think it's really good what they're doing by putting Aboriginal Indigenous communities forward and first. And I think that's something that needs to be copied elsewhere in places like the US, where Native American communities just might not get the recognition.
Very well answered. Take one more question if anyone has one. Ruben, will you show people what's on your T-shirt?
This is a blank T-shirt that I got ages ago, and I drew on it. If trees gave out Wi-Fi, we'd be planting them like mad. It's a real shame they just give out oxygen in all caps.
So, Ruben, come here. I want to give you a hug.